It is Wednesday, October 25th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Doug Bernard in Washington. Coming up this half hour, the U.S. Republican Party works to quiet an insurrection. China's president solidifies his position among the key leaders of the Communist Republic. And walking to New Orleans with Fats Domino one last time.
Well, as far as I know, music make people happy. I know it make me happy.
Yes, indeed it does. That and more ahead in the next half hour on VOA. U.S. President Donald Trump today mocked two Republican senators who condemned his White House performance, saying the very simple reason that they are retiring is that they had zero chance of being reelected. In Twitter comments, Mr. Trump said Senators Jeff Flake of Arizona and Bob Corker of Tennessee, quote, now act so hurt and wounded. Trump's rebuke of Flake and Corker came a day after both lawmakers had offered a brutal commentary on the first 9 months of his presidency. Senator Flake, in a speech on the Senate floor, announced he would not seek another six-year term in the November 2018 election. He then slammed Trump's behavior as dangerous to our democracy and called on other Republicans to denounce the president's conduct. His speech came after Corker and Trump traded taunts for hours. Jeffrey Skelly is a political analyst at the University of Virginia's Center for Politics. He spoke with my colleague Sarah Williams about the controversy.
This degree of combativeness between a president and prominent senators in his own party is really unprecedented. At least we've never really seen anything like this. I mean, there have obviously been conflicts between a president and members of the U.S. Senate before. However, really the one example people keep sort of going back to is Franklin Roosevelt in 1938, sort of leading what was known as a purge of some conservative Democratic senators in the elections that year, which pretty much failed entirely. But, even then, I don't think that the kind of rhetoric you see and the conflict you see between President Trump and now two retiring members of the Republican caucus in the U.S. Senate, it's much beyond that.
The fact that both of these senators, Senator Flake and Senator Corker, are stepping down, that seems to give them a freedom to talk about their, I guess you could say, their real feelings in regard to Mr. Trump. But I believe that Mr. Flake said that there are other senators that have similar views to his, but they're afraid at the moment to speak out.
Sure. I mean, look, at the end of the day, Donald Trump currently has a roughly 80% approval rating among Republicans. So criticizing Trump is dangerous politically for any member of the GOP, Senate or House or otherwise, because of the potential danger of a primary challenge or nomination challenge, if a state uses a convention system or something. So those who intend on keeping their offices or, trying to keep their office may not want to publicly criticize the president because they're afraid that it will prompt, a primary challenge. And so for Corker and Flake, they no longer have to concern themselves with that because they have decided to not seek re-election. And so they no longer have fear that, saying something is going to cost them electorally because they don't have skin in the game in that way anymore.
Well, this comes not long after former presidents, George W. Bush, a Republican, and Barack Obama, a Democrat, also seemed to criticize Mr. Trump, but they did not criticize him by name. And again, usually former presidents try to stay out of political fighting. But, again, this seems to sort of speak to all the controversy surrounding President Trump.
Sure. Look, I mean, much of what President Trump is doing and saying and how he's comporting himself is unprecedented. We haven't seen this before. And those who have come before him in the presidency are obviously critical of him for acting in that way. And members of his own party are critical, whether publicly or privately, of his behavior and how he comports himself. So, no, we haven't seen anything like this. And, I think, you know, we're such a long way from the 2018 midterm election and an even longer way from the 2020 presidential election. And so there's plenty of time for, I guess, more of this to build, more of this kind of criticism, public criticism to build. But I do think it's important to understand the country is very divided and that, largely speaking, Republican voters are behind the president. And as long as that remains the case, you know, I think you're just going to see a lot of conflict, a lot of back and forth, a lot of just distrust and anger. And, you know, I don't really see a light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, well, but in a way, could it be that the, because some observers say that the Republican Party itself is kind of splitting into what they're known as, I guess, establishment Republicans, and Republicans that are followers of President Trump?
Well, currently President Trump has, you know, roughly an 80% approval rating among Republicans. So, you know, it's, if there is a split, it's pretty clear which side's going to have a lot more people. So, you know, these things can change, and obviously President Trump's approval rating could get better or could get worse among the general public and among those who identify as Republican. So, you know, it's difficult to say where things are going to go, but, you know, I would be cautious on talking about some kind of actual split, you know, an actual, I guess, institutional split in the Republican Party. The United States has a two-party system. There are many systemic reasons for why that remains, even with all the conflicts within, you know, both major parties.
Jeffrey Skelly is a political analyst at the University of Virginia's Center for Politics. He spoke with my colleague, VOA's Sarah Williams. Well, joining us now, as he does, is VOA's social media editor, Andrew Palcheski. Now, Andrew, you know, we often take a look at how social media is responding to one or two of the big top stories, the news stories. This next one is certainly a news story, but one I think that hits the heart more than it does the head. I'm, of course, talking about the death of musician Fats Domino. Now, we're going to have a little bit more later in the program on his legacy. But, Andrew, is this affecting people online?
It is affecting people. It's something that has evoked an emotional response on social media. So many words we're seeing to describe Fats Domino: legendary, pioneer, founding father of rock and roll, someone who has had influence on popular music in the United States and then subsequently around the world as rock and roll spread, really for the past five or six decades.
Yeah, and I don't think that's going over the edge. I think that's an accurate description.
It is. I mean, you look at the work that he's done, in not just the songs that he's created, songs that people know, like Blueberry Hill, which is a song, by the way, that Russian President Vladimir Putin sang along to a few years ago. That's become kind of a viral video online, so giving it some new cultural relevance. But on its own, Blueberry Hill is one of the standards of rhythm and blues and rock and roll. Ain't That a Shame, which I saw one person tweet out and said, it is the happiest sounding breakup song that he has ever heard. And just as a musician, a talented musician, and someone who really was one of the forefathers in the genre of rock and roll and popular music, took the piano that he was a prodigy at and took that from kind of a niche genre and rhythm and blues and made it into the mainstream. So we're seeing a lot of tributes to that visionary work and great work from some big names in music, too. Harry Connick Jr., well-known jazz pianist and someone who, like Fats Domino, is from New Orleans. Fats Domino, a son of New Orleans. Harry Connick Jr. writing on Twitter that you helped pave the way for New Orleans piano players. See you on top of that Blueberry Hill in the sky. So a really nice tribute from him. Charlie Daniels, a famed country musician.
Charlie Daniels.
You know, of the eponymous Charlie Daniels band, said, Fats Domino, you brought me so many hours of pleasure. Rest in peace, sir. And Brian Wilson of the Beach Boys. Fats Domino's songs were all over the radio when I was growing up, he says. He was a great singer and piano player, and all his music will last forever. So you see, just from that small slice of tributes on social media, what an impact he had across all kinds of genres. Jazz, country music, rock and roll, popular music. This was someone who left an indelible mark on popular music, again, in the United States and around the world.
And, you know, that pounding blues piano that he brought into the mainstream— I guess it's really not saying too much. I know this may not be out on social media, but maybe it's not saying too much to say he was really the bridge between blues and rock and roll. And he and there's no way I can't think to listen to a Fats Domino song, even if it's a sad song or whatever it is, you just feel good. It just feels so good.
Yeah, and the memories that people are sharing when they hear his music, people are talking about the first time they heard a Fats Domino song, or they used to listen to him with their grandparents when they were growing up. And even going beyond that, we're seeing instances where people are saying they were inspired by Fats Domino, current musicians that were inspired by him. They're seeing elements and traces of his work, even 60 years after he was having these big hits. They're seeing that in popular music today with the use of rhythm and blues and piano and bridging a lot of the genres together. So certainly social media is remembering him fondly, remembering his work, and someone that had such a huge role in our culture beyond these popular standards, someone who really shaped the music that we know and love today.
I will miss him. Andrew Palcheski, thank you so much.
Thank you. I will miss him as well.
VOA's Andrew Palcheski is our social media editor. Here are some of the top stories that we're tracking at this hour. The NAACP has issued a travel advisory for African Americans looking to fly American Airlines. Turkey frees 8 human rights activists pending the outcome of a terror trial. The U.S. House votes to place sanctions on Hezbollah and a slap at Iran. And the U.S. and Gulf countries have joined together to impose joint sanctions to curb terrorism in Yemen. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more on our website, voanews.com. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Scientists say for the first half of Earth's history, there was no free or breathable oxygen in the atmosphere. While some oxygen was being produced by early organisms through photosynthesis, most of it was being absorbed by minerals such as olivine. Then about 2.3 billion years ago, Earth's atmosphere began its first substantial and permanent inflow of breathable oxygen with the so-called Great Oxidation Event. According to a new study, this event took place around the same time as changes were being made in the Earth's crust. Study suggests as the crust evolved, the olivine nearly disappeared. Without that mineral absorbing so much free oxygen, the gas was able to accumulate in our atmosphere, providing the kind of air we know and need today. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Welcome back to International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Doug Bernard, live in Washington. Coming up, a farewell to the man who brought rock and roll to the world. First, China's ruling Communist Party has unveiled a new leadership lineup for its top decision-making body, the Politburo Standing Committee, which is the apex of power in the world's second-largest economy. But breaking with precedents, among those named, there was no clear successor. VOA's Bill Ide has more from Beijing.
Strutting out onto the red carpet and led by Chinese President Xi Jinping, China unveiled its new 7-member leadership team Wednesday at a brief invitation-only gathering for the press. VOA and several other international media organizations were not invited. Both Premier Li Keqiang and Xi were reelected. The 5 other newcomers include 2 key advisors to Xi, Wang Huning and Li Jianshu. Zhao Leji, the man tapped to become the country's anti-corruption chief, State Council Vice Chairman Wang Yang, and Shanghai Party Secretary Han Zheng. But clearly the focus was on one man alone.
The first plenary session of the 19th Central Committee elected a new central leadership. The Congress re-elected me as the General Secretary. I see this as not just an approval of my work, but also an encouragement that will spur me on.
This is
Increasingly, Xi is seen as China's most powerful leader since Mao Zedong ruled the country. At a tightly scripted party congress that ended Tuesday, he further cemented his authoritarian grip. In a unanimous vote, the Congress added his name and political vision for China to the Communist Party's constitution, an honor no other Chinese leader has been given except for Mao. Xi has big plans for the country and China's communist system.
The Chinese Communist Party is the world's largest political party. If one is big, one must act big. History makes it abundantly clear that the Chinese Communist Party is capable of not only spearheading a great social revolution, but also imposing great revolution on itself.
How long that revolution will last with Xi at the helm is unclear. Among the new leadership team, there was no obvious successor. And with his increased power and ambitious plans laid out at the party congress, many analysts see Xi Jinping staying around for some time to come. Bill Ide, VOA News, Beijing.
So what exactly does Xi Jinping's elevation to a third term mean specifically for China? Jean-Pierre Cabestan is a professor and head of government and international relations at Hong Kong Baptist University. He told International Edition's Victor Beatty that the new leadership strengthens Xi's position at the head of the Communist Party.
Among the seven members of the standing committee of the Politburo, four are clearly, including himself, but another three members are very close to Xi Jinping, to the party general secretary. Zhao Leqi, the leader in charge of the anti-corruption campaign and discipline within the party. Li Zhenshu, the new head of the Chinese parliament. And Wang Huning, who is in charge of the party ideology and the central secretariat of the party. They are clearly close to Xi Jinping. There is another guy, actually, who also has made allegiance to Xi Jinping. His name is Han Zhang, the former secretary of Shanghai's municipality, and who is going to be the executive vice premier, just behind Li Keqiang, at the top of the state council of the Chinese government. And then you have two representatives of the old Hu Jintao faction. The Hu Jintao was Xi Jinping's predecessor. You have Wang Yang, who is going to take care of the Consultative Conference, a rather formal position. He will be in charge of United Front work. He will be in charge of relations with Taiwan and Hong Kong and Macau. But he won't be as powerful as the other leaders.
What does this tell you about Xi Jinping's leadership?
It tells us that power is going to be even more concentrated in the hands of Xi Jinping himself and in the hands of his allies. Now, if we look at the Politburo, the 25-member Politburo, you've got a lot of supporters of Xi Jinping, including the new party secretary of Beijing, Shanghai, Tianjin, and Chongqing. These four big cities and municipalities are going to be very faithful to Xi Jinping. And some provinces, key provinces or regions like Xinjiang region and the Guangdong province are going also to be very much controlled by Xi Jinping supporters. Now, for the rest of the country, it may be more complicated, and that's where we're going to test, actually, the limits of Xi Jinping's power, because you've got a number of provincial leaders who are still rather autonomous and not necessarily close to Xi Jinping himself.
No clear successor?
Not at this stage. There's been a lot of speculation about Chen Ming'er, the new party leader of Chongqing, the city of Chongqing. He's not been promoted to the standing committee, and I don't think that Xi Jinping wants to promote him until the next party congress, if any, because there are a lot of speculations about Xi Jinping's ambition to stay longer in power, more than 10 years, and to sort of cling to power after 2022.
Jean-Pierre Cabestan also added that despite China's central role on the international stage, the new leadership faces a number of challenges and limitations, including its growing debt and North Korea. He said that Pyongyang, an insoluble problem in the past, not only represents a headache for Washington, but for Beijing as well, and will be a key test of the new Chinese leadership. This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter, every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition, coming to you live from Washington. I'm Doug Bernard. Millions of children the world over dream of visiting Disney World. But Sean Baker's heartbreaking film drama, The Florida Project, throws light on those living in dire poverty right under the shadow of Cinderella's castle in Orlando. The film underscores the social divide in America through the eyes and lives of those children. VOA's Penelope Pulu spoke with the director and the cast.
The man who lives in here gets arrested a lot. These are the rooms we're not supposed to go in. But let's go anyway!
The Florida Project follows precocious 6-year-old Mooney and her friends roaming around during the sweltering Florida summer months. They live in cheap motels like the Magic Castle, barely supervised by their single underemployed or unemployed mothers.
When your friend puts you in charge of her kid, that kid becomes your responsibility. You ain't taking responsibility.
Filmmaker Sean Baker reveals the darker underbelly of an America that barely subsists.
My co-screenwriter brought this topic to my attention, the fact that there are families with children living in budget motels outside of what we consider the happiest place on earth, you know, a place for children. And that juxtaposition obviously grabbed me.
Baker was inspired by The Little Rascals, the comic shorts about a gang of children getting into trouble in the 1920s and 1930s. The series was set against the Great Depression, depicting poverty through the life and resilience of children. Brooklyn Prince plays boisterous Mooney, her childlike pranks verging into serious offenses. The motel manager, Bobby, played by Willem Dafoe, is the only one who can barely supervise these unruly kids. Dafoe's character was inspired by a real low-budget motel manager in Florida.
Thank you very much.
You're not welcome.
Bria Vinette inhabits Mooney's infantile mother, Haley. She loves her daughter and tries to stay positive, but she's unable to get a job or any kind of child support and slowly crumbles. Vinette says she drew from real-life women who have fallen by the wayside.
You have a daughter who you have to take care of, a roof to put over her head, food, and then on top of that, you have to take care of yourself. And it's just like, I feel like in her situation, her concerns aren't even important to her. It's about Mooney.
Both Vinette and Prince, who'd never acted before, delivered tour de force performances. Eventually, Mooney's childlike optimism gets tested by the stark reality that an uncaring society will ultimately decide her fate. Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
Finally today, a final note. Legendary New Orleans musician Antoine Fats Domino, who did so much to shape American popular music that came to be known as rock and roll, died at the age of 89. Officials with the New Orleans Coroner's Office said Domino died Tuesday of natural causes. The stout musician was known for his pounding piano style and baritone voice. He sold more than 110 million records, including the hits Blueberry Hill, Ain't That a Shame, and many other rock and roll standards. He performed live for the better part of 5 decades and was among the first 10 honorees named to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. It's certainly a pleasure being here tonight, and I want to thank everyone who participated, who put me in the Hall of Fame. I can say thanks to Atlantic Records, and it's a pleasure being here with the great artists that have been on stage before I came on tonight, like Ray Charles, Chuck Berry, all of them great, James Brown. But I wish that Elvis Presley, Sam Cooke, and Buddy Holly were still living to be... I wish they were still living to be here with us tonight.
May God bless them wherever they may be. And thanks to all of you, what y'all did for me.
For a brief time, Domino went missing after Hurricane Katrina struck New Orleans. He and his family were rescued by boat from his home, where he lost three piano and dozens of gold and platinum records. He returned to the stage in 2007, performing hits at a local music club. And that is our program for today. Thank you so much for listening with us. We'll be back with you again tomorrow. We hope to see you then.
The moon stood still on Blueberry Hill. It lingered until my dream came true. The wind in the willow played love's sweet melody.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Cambodian Prime Minister Hun Sen's government took legal steps to disband the Cambodian National Rescue Party, or CNRP. The U.S. is also deeply concerned by the National Assembly's passage of amendments to Cambodia's election law. If ratified, these amendments, in conjunction with the lawsuit by the Cambodian Ministry of Interior to dissolve the CNRP, would effectively disenfranchise the millions of people who voted for the CNRP in the 2013 and 2017 elections, said State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert. If the main opposition party is disbanded, Hun Sen's government plans to redistribute its 55 seats in the lower house of the National Assembly to five political parties that didn't win any seats in the 2013 general election. In a statement, CNRP lawmakers, all of whom boycotted the legislative session, called the approval by ruling Cambodian People's Party members of parliament an abuse of power and the will of the people. This is part of a trend by the Cambodian government to stamp out dissent from all sources, including the press. Recently, government authorities shuttered an English-language newspaper, the Cambodia Daily, for allegedly not paying a large tax bill. More than a dozen radio stations that broadcast dissident voices or used programming from the Voice of America and Radio Free Asia were forced to stop broadcasting for alleged breach of regulations. Genuine competition is essential to democracy and to the legitimacy of the 2018 national elections, said spokesperson Nauert. History proves that suppressing legitimate political activity leads to more long-term instability rather than less. We urge government officials to consider the serious implications of their recent actions, and we renew our call that the leader of the CNRP, Kem Sokha, be released from prison.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.